This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
It looks like we're finally going to have some world sanity back. We'll talk about this ceasefire, talk about the confirmation hearings, a nasty cat fight on the House floor, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so I have to confess something. I know we have the Biden farewell address, but there's something about me that I don't know that it's a good thing. I don't know that it's a bad thing. I'm just going to explain something about me and how I work. You haven't seen us do a lot of death tributes on this show, meaning when a famous person of some kind dies, a politician, you know, we just lost Jimmy Carter recently, or a musician or things like that. You don't generally see us do a lot of, oh, it's a sad, sad day. Oh, pray for Jimmy Carter's family. And I'm going to explain why. I don't care. And especially if it's somebody I generally disliked, as it is Jimmy Carter, out of respect, I choose not to say anything at all. I don't dance on the grave. I don't celebrate the loss, but I also don't pretend like I'm heartbroken over the whole thing. I just kind of move along. And I feel the same way about these politicians, these statesmen who have been lifelong scumbags, and they're giving farewell addresses. We're supposed to all be what? Despondent that Joe Biden's long, decades-long career of vindictiveness and corruption is coming to an end. Oh, Joe, please don't go. You were the best. No, he wasn't the best. So I'm not talking about it. He was a piece of crap, a vicious, nasty piece of crap. His entire career, at the end of his career, he was a senile, vicious, nasty piece of crap who was too old, power hungry, and weak to actually take back any power in the White House. Of course, he wanted to be president. That's where the power hungry comes in, but he couldn't function. So he got into office, and for 4 years, we've had the most nasty communists running the United States of America. His regime was banana republic-like in its censorship, its attacks of American citizens. I'm old enough to remember when that old jerk told us he was losing patience with us because we weren't getting vaccinated fast enough. So goodbye, Joe. Allow me to be the first to say farewell. Now on to the hearings today. Marco Rubio is going to be Secretary of State. And you should know, again, how many senators have come on this show and told us, looks like all these guys are going to get confirmed. The suspense appears to be gone. The senators got sufficiently slapped around and threatened with primaries by you, and it looks like all these guys are going to get through. Now, I'm certainly not the world's biggest Rubio fan. I'm not the world's biggest Rubio hater, but here's what he said today.
Here's my view of a situation. Once this war became what we now know it is, and that is a war of attrition, a stalemate, a protracted conflict, the dynamic on that situation has changed. So this is an important conflict, and I think it should be the official position of the United States that this war should be brought to an end. And my hope is that it could begin with some ceasefire, and we're going to have, in order to achieve objectives like the one that needs to occur in Ukraine, it is important for everyone to be realistic. There will have to be concessions made by the Russian Federation, but also by the Ukrainians, and the United States has lent itself there. It's also important that there be some balance on both sides. In essence, it will be difficult to achieve this objective of a ceasefire and ultimately a peace settlement unless both sides have leverage. This will not be easy. Conflicts of this nature that have historical underpinnings to it are going to require a lot of hard diplomacy and tough work, but that's something that needs to happen. This conflict needs to end.
Well, I'm out of time, but
that was a great answer. That's how a Secretary of State is supposed to sound. It's exactly the kind of thing a Secretary of State is supposed to say. We're going to come in. Our goal is people need to stop dying. We're going to bring everybody to the table. We're going to be realistic. I'm not promising you rainbows and unicorns. We have to work on leverage. It's going to be a long process. There's a lot of history here, but it's time for people to stop dying. That's the exact thing that should have been happening under Democrat rule for the last 4 years. But because those animals don't really care about human life, we've been stuck with this slaughterhouse over there with no attempts whatsoever to make it stop. If that's where we're going, fine. I historically have disagreed with Marco Rubio a lot on foreign policy. I'm sure I still do. That, however, was a wonderful answer, and looks like we're going to get some sanity back. Now on to Pam Bondi. I'm not going to repeat myself again. I have concerns. Not that she'll be a disaster. I've not heard that from a single person. People that know her, are very familiar with her, say she's very competent, very sharp, that she'll do a very good job. But I have not had a single person familiar with her tell me she's going to do what I want, and that's arrest government people, lots of them, because we have to throw criminals in government in prison in order to save the country. I don't think that's what we're going to get. Pam Bondi got the thumbs up from the Washington Post. Very competent. And I'm not a Pam Bondi hater. I'm just apprehensive. She did very well, I will say, today in her hearings.
I'm not going to mislead this body, nor you.
All right, let me ask another question. You don't want to answer that. Let me ask another question.
You were censured by Congress, also, Senator, for comments also, just like this that are so reckless.
Can you say no to the President of the United States when he asks you to do something unethical or illegal?
Senator, first, I need to clarify something that you said, that I have to sit up here and say these things. No, I don't. I sit up here and speak the truth. I'm not going to sit up here and say anything that I need to say to get confirmed by this body.
It would not be appropriate for a prosecutor to start with a name and look for a crime. It's a prosecutor's job to start with a crime and look for a name, correct?
Senator, I think that is the whole problem with the weaponization that we have seen the last 4 years and what's been happening to Donald Trump. They targeted Donald Trump.
That you as Attorney General should investigate one of his perceived political enemies. Would you do so?
Senator Hirono, I wish you had met with me. Had you met with me, we could have discussed many things and gotten to know
you. I am listening to you now. Could you respond to the question?
Yeah, you were the only one who refused to meet with me, Senator.
Pretty good. Didn't back off. Composed herself. She was really good today. She's going to get confirmed. And from here on out, we will see what she does. Now, there are things that you and I have to do going forward. You see, we're thrilled. We have a new administration coming in. It'll be down for like 5 days now. Trump will be in on Monday, Inauguration Day. Woohoo, we're all happy. Sanity's coming in. Life is good. Things are going to get better. But we have GOPers in the House and the Senate that must be removed during the primary process. And as I told you before, it looks ominous. It sounds ominous. It's very hard to primary out a sitting senator after all, but we don't have to do that many of them. You don't have to do them all. All you need is a scalp or two, and the rest of them will quickly fall into line like the cowards they are. And scalp numero uno on my list is one John Cornyn from the great state of Texas. He is up for a primary in 2026. He is facing a potential juggernaut of a primary challenger, Ken Paxton, current AG of the state of Texas. But John Cornyn is one of these deep state protectorate swamp rat types who passed gun control legislation at the behest of Mitch McConnell. He's been up there screwing us every chance he gets. Will the GOP primary voter in Texas remember little tidbits like this from today when he goes to vote next year?
Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I've called this the most important law that most people have never heard of. It's been called the crown jewel of U.S. intelligence. And of course, it cannot be used, legally used, to spy on American citizens. And if it is, it ought to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. We have a temporary extension of the existing authorization for the use of the intelligence community to target foreign threats to our national security that expires in 2026. And I'd like you just confirm here on the record that you will enforce that law and you can support the law as it is written?
Senator, I haven't read the entire 702 in front of you, but I will commit to reading that and doing everything I can to keep America safe again.
Okay. Setting aside her non-committal answer, that's kind of how she asked to answer that question. Why would a senator, a GOP senator, talk so lovingly about FISA? We know, of course, it's been used on American citizens. That's not even up for debate. Even John Cornyn isn't that stupid. We know it. You know it. I know it. John Cornyn, I promise you, knows it. So he could have just remained silent. Why bring it up at all? Why speak so lovingly about it? Well, let me tell you what I suspect. It's just what I suspect. You see, it's one thing to be an old school type, no, spy on everyone all the time, catch those terrorists. It's another thing to look at all the endless abuses of FISA, which has been weaponized against us, and sing its praises and demand the incoming AG do the same. When I see United States senators like John Cornyn do that, I see people who have been compromised in some way. And that's simply what I suspect every single time I see them do that. I see a United States senator who maybe has some pictures out there that shouldn't be out there. There's only one reason you would bring that up out of nowhere and demand the incoming AG support it. I mean, James, speaking of primary targets, numero dos on my list is Senator Naked Kendall Langford from the great state of Oklahoma. Should have been primaried years ago. He wanted to talk to the incoming CIA director about it.
World, what is your position on 702 authority?
Sometimes more than half of the actionable foreign intelligence that we provide to the president as the policymaker to act as commander in chief comes from FISA derived or 702 derived action. I will say I have supported FISA in that regard, but I've also, as I outlined earlier, understand that it is an important, indispensable tool, but one that can be abused,
right,
and that we must do everything we can to make sure that it has the appropriate safeguards because it can't come at the sacrifice of Americans' civil liberty. So I have supported those reforms and called out those abuses when they have taken place.
The safeguards for the FISA court are already in place. It's the FISA court. It's the FISA judge who's supposed to sign off on it. When the FBI comes with a file and they want FISA authorization, the judges approve it over 98% of the time. Did you know that? There are no safeguards in place. Of course, Ratcliffe knows that. Langford knows that as well. But again, I come back to just a suspicion. I don't know anything, just a suspicion. Every time I see a GOPer in Washington wrap his arms around FISA and give it a big sloppy kiss, I automatically assume there are pictures of you with midgets out there. I'm sorry, that's the way it works in D.C. There's no other reason you'd still be singing its praises. Now, one final word on Ratcliffe. I thought he did pretty well here.
In 2020, when a chairman of an intelligence committee misrepresented that a laptop owned by then-candidate Biden's son was somehow a Russian intelligence operation, and 51 former intelligence officials used the imprimatur of IC authority to go along with that, I stood in the breach. I stood alone and told the American people the truth about that.
It did, and I'm hopeful we'll see what he can get done. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll obviously continue during confirmation week to cover all of this stuff moving forward. Before we do those things, I want to do something for you, something wonderful. The gift of a great night's sleep changes everything when you get one, doesn't it? You get one, you just spring out of bed, and you know my mind's gonna feel good all day. I'm gonna be in a good mood all day. I'm gonna have the energy to get done what I need to get done. And that's what Dream Powder from Beam can do for you. It's a cup of hot chocolate. It's delicious, I should note. If you didn't know there were things in it, you'd never know there were things in it. I sip on a cup of hot chocolate before bed, and it has natural things in it, like melatonin. And I just kind of zonk out. And I wake up, I sleep through the night, and I wake up feeling great. You want to feel like that every day like I do? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Support reauthorizing FISA in 2025?
Senator, I believe 702 is up in 2026.
Okay, I'm sorry,
I believe
26.
It's 2026, and we will closely be looking at that. FISA is a very important
tool. Do you agree
tool.
That the 702 provides important intel gathering capability to protect our nation?
Extremely important.
Okay. So, Pam, you're about to step into a job that's one of the most important jobs in any democracy.
One, we're not a democracy. United States Senator, I would hope, would know that. Two, as I talked about in the open, after all the abuses of our rights we've seen by FISA, every time I see a GOP senator talking lovingly about FISA, sorry, I see a GOP senator that has dirty pictures out there from the intelligence agency. Joining me now, Mel Kay, author of the book Americans Anonymous. Man, these GOP types, John Cornyn, James Naked Kendall Langford, Lindsey Graham, they sure do love them some FISA, Mel.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter that it totally violates the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment, or that it was abused 3 million times in the first Trump administration, let alone was how Crossfire Hurricane was set up. And don't forget, when they extended it, they made sure that Congress nor anyone connected to Congress can ever be FISA'd from 702. So it exempted them as well. It's truly unbelievable.
That always seems to work out for these people. So explain to people, Mel, for those maybe people are just now tuning in, getting aware of the political process. FISA, what do you mean abused? How's it been abused? What is it? How'd they abuse it?
Okay, well, FISA 702 is basically a way, after the Unconstitutional Patriot Act, it was passed to spy on people without a warrant, without them knowing, using the NSA database. And basically, this can be for any reason. So they can, Chris Wray or anyone else can say somebody's a threat to national security and they're going to open a file on you. And the OIG came out with a report about the abuses of FISA being over 3 million Americans during the Trump administration and after, certainly during January 6th, were violated by the FISA abuse, but also 10,000 agents inside the FBI and the intelligence community violated the rules of FISA in order to spy on American citizens. First of all, FISA should be only for foreigners, but really what they're doing now is what they do is they use FISA, and then anyone that they're going after with FISA who's spoken to that person, they're going to jump to and allow themselves to spy on that person. And honestly, what's scary is that this is all coming through while they're trying to push the true real ID and the track and trace surveillance at the airports and the global public infrastructure with Palantir. So when you look at the big picture, the FISA is really one step closer to literal Big Brother in America without any control, because now they're entering AI into the FISA database collection. So, I mean, it's very dangerous and it's totally unconstitutional.
So what do you make of the Cornyn, James Langford, Lindsey Graham types and how much they love it? Everything you just said is an easily verifiable fact. It's not even an opinion. These are things that have been well documented, but Lindsey loves it. Why, Mel?
Well, I think it's because of control. I think it's also these people are very siloed. The entire IC, all of the different agencies after 9/11 were supposed to come together and work together. That is not what's happening. What is happening is that they are very siloed into different groups. So it's very possible that Langford and Lindsey Graham and these people are getting information predominantly from the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence that this is crucial to finding terrorists in America. But we all know that's not what it's about, and it never was. It really is about a full track and trace surveillance system like in China that these same people funded and built that they want to run here, pretending that it's for our own safety yet again.
What other concerns do you have about Pam Bondi? She did very, very well today, kept herself together. There were some answers to some questions that certainly annoyed me, I guess I'll put it that way. What are your concerns?
Well, my one concern is still, I am still concerned about what happened with the George Zimmerman case when she was the AG. I know that she's done a lot of great work and she really, really knows the entire Ukraine impeachment scenario because she defended Trump. But something did happen with Ray Crump and Eric Holder during the Zimmerman case where she was instrumental in reopening a totally provable self-defense case as a civil rights case under the DOJ National Security Division. And Bill Crump put up a witness that was not the real witness. And everyone knew it, and she must have known it. I would like to have somebody question her about what happened during the George Zimmerman case, because there was a lot of really, really bad stuff that set off the Black Lives Matter uprising that had to do with reopening that case as a civil rights case, with Eric Holder then cementing the whole idea that the white supremacists were the problem in America. And that was a key moment in the Black Lives Matter fueling their fire towards the summer of riots.
One thing that was apparent today during the hearings was these people are concerned about Kash Patel taking over the FBI. Here was this exchange.
Yes.
Would you have hired someone into the Florida Attorney General's office who you knew had an enemies list?
Senator, to cut to the chase, you're clearly talking about Kash Patel. I don't believe he has an enemies list. He has great experience in the Intel Department, Department of Defense. I have known Kash, and I believe that Kash is the right person at this time for this job. You'll have the ability to question Mr. Patel.
And I'm questioning you right now about whether you will enforce an enemies list that he announced publicly on television.
Oh, Senator, I'm sorry. There will never be an enemies list within the Department of Justice.
Thank you.
Why are they so worried about Kash?
Well, A, because they spied on Kash with the 702, so let's remember that. Also, because Kash Patel and Devin Nunes put in 12 criminal referrals and have all the evidence. And also, beyond that, Kash is the one who more than anyone else has identified the players. A lot of people don't talk about the names of who's behind Lawfare, who's behind West Exec Advisors, what they've been doing behind the scenes and in the shadow government. Kash knows all of that. And frankly, it's not an enemies list against anyone except for the people of the United States of America who were lied to for over 10 years about everything having to do with Donald Trump and Russiagate and all of that. That's not an enemies list. That's a list of people that should be held accountable for breaking the trust of the United States citizens and for lying to this country in cahoots with the media for total distraction. While we could have been building our country back, they were tearing it down behind the scenes, and Kash knows where the bodies are buried. So I don't blame them for not wanting him there, but he's got all the evidence that he already needs.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Mel, as always, I appreciate you. Come back soon. All right. Sean Parnell is going to join us in a moment. Before Sean joins us, Sean's a veteran. He was at the Pete Hegseth hearing. We admire people who actually fought for the country, right? Well, when we talk about Pure Talk, you know that their CEO walked the jungles of Vietnam. Not just one tour, not that would have been, bad, but two tours with Mac V. Sog. People look at Pure Talk and the things they do. They hire Americans, they give back to veterans, and they ask why. Why don't they give to Planned Parenthood and all the other crap that all the big guys do? Well, Pure Talk's about this country, all about this country, top to bottom. And you'll pay less. You keep your phone, you keep your number. They make it easy. That's the most important thing, they make it easy. If it's a pain, you're never going to switch, but Pure Talk makes it cake. Go. PureTalk.com/JesseTV saves you even more money. Switch to Pure Talk. We'll be back. It had to be a long day yesterday for old Pete Hegseth. Joining me now, my friend, a man who was there yesterday, Sean Parnell, veteran host of Battleground Live. Sean, my word, were you just sitting there mainlining ibuprofen all day long? That had to be brutal.
Give that man the silver star for that performance, for having to endure that. That was a strange strategy to have him come in there and just be berated by, you know, angry, not just women senators, but just Democrat senators. I would also say very, very ineffectively so for what was over a 4-hour hearing. And, you know, the crazy thing, Jesse, is that Pete did a really great job. He was calm. He was composed. He was measured. He understands the issues of the Department of Defense and the Pentagon at a deep and substantive level. So he's got it all on lockdown. But did you notice the Democrats, their strategy, how they started with policy? When that wasn't working, they went to the whole women in combat thing. When that wasn't working, they went right to attacking this man's personal life. And that kind of stuff just makes me sick, because anytime there is an effective conservative that is right on the policy, that can articulate themselves effectively and sway the American people, they start assassinating character. And that was the playbook that they used yesterday. And they were trying to knock Pete Hegseth off. But I don't think they're going to be successful. I think he's going to be confirmed.
Yeah, it was ugly. In fact, I didn't even play that Tim Kaine clip from yesterday. It was so gross. But I guess since you brought it up, Sean, so who was it?
Can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before, and you tell us you are completely cleared? Senator, how is that a complete clear?
Senator, her child's name is Gwendolyn Hope Hegseth, and she's a child of God, and she's 7 years old.
And she was, and you cheated on the mother of that child less than 2 months after that daughter was born, didn't you? But
fully
you acknowledge that you cheated on your wife and that you cheated on the woman by whom you had just fathered a child. You have admitted that.
I will allow your words to speak for themselves.
You're not retracting that today. That's good. I assume that in each of your weddings, you've pledged to be faithful to your wife. You've taken an oath to do that, haven't you? Many of your work colleagues have said that you show up for work under the influence of alcohol or drunk. I know you've denied that, but you would agree with me, right, that if that was the case, that would be disqualifying for somebody to be Secretary of Defense. And I'll just conclude and say this to the chairman. You claim that this was all anonymous. We have seen records with names attached to all of these, including the name of your own mother. So don't make this into some anonymous press thing.
Sean, my question is, yeah, it's gross, it's awful, it's terrible, it's all those things. But does this stuff work anymore? Or did the Kavanaugh hearings, was that their last hurrah for this kind of stuff? And now the American people are just kind of, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, Jesse, if I had to guess, I haven't seen any poll numbers or any sort of public testing on this, but I don't think that this stuff works. In fact, I think it has the opposite effect. The American people are just tired of this. And let's talk about the senator from Virginia, Tim Kaine. This is a guy that endorsed Bill Clinton and had no issues with any of his behavior. This was a guy that was on the ticket with Hillary Clinton. And of course, we know all about Hillary Clinton and how she waged a war against all of the Bill Clinton's accusers during his time in the White House. Had nothing to say about that. The hypocrisy here is astounding. And moreover, contrary to what Senator Kaine said, these are indeed all anonymous allegations. Every single one of them. There hasn't been one single name attached to any of these. And what was fascinating yesterday during the hearing is that Hegseth's team was able to figure out the Democrat line of attack prior to the hearing. So if you watched it, you'd see all of these allegations, false allegations leveled by the Democrats, because all they have are lies and hoaxes, seriously. You mismanaged finances at Vets for Freedom. So then a Republican senator would read a statement from somebody from Vets for Freedom saying, I was a CFO. Actually, our finances were great. Oh, you mismanaged finances at CBA. Then the statement from the follow-on executive director of CBA is like, actually, I followed Pete in this role and he gave me a powerhouse of an organization. So the entire, I mean, to me, Pete Hegseth walked out of there and ultimately he did exactly what he needed to do to sway public sentiment. And part of these hearings, Jesse, as you know, it's just to be able to maintain composure while you take your licks. Pete was able to do that as well. And the most important thing is he was able to sway Joni Ernst to vote for him, which essentially means, you know, barring any unforeseen circumstances, you know how politics goes, essentially means if nothing changes by the 21st, which is the day the full Senate votes, he seems like he is going to be a lock for this position. And that is just so important because Pete's testimony and that hearing yesterday really set the tone for all of Trump's cabinet nomination. Couldn't let Pete get knocked off, because if we did, they would have just rolled out the same strategy against Kash Patel and RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard. It would have just been the same darn thing over and over again. So President Trump could not have asked for a better leadoff hitter in this regard.
Speaking of taking your licks, where's Kamala Harris been, John? She seems to have just disappeared since the election. What?
Yeah, and the people of California are paying for it. You know, if you're the sitting vice president, your husband is a resident of Los Angeles. Those people have been devastated by the wildfires out there. By the way, complete uniparty Democrat control out there, supermajority control for decades. This is why I say that the new Democrat Party and Democrat policies are an existential threat to America, because of stuff like this. In good times, bad leadership, maybe people can get by and not notice. But in times of great crisis, that's when real leaders rise, Jesse, and rise to the moment. Here she is. She has all the power of the executive branch, the sitting vice president. She actually ran for president. She could have told Joe Biden, you know what? I'm done. I'm going out to Los Angeles. I'm going out to California. And I'm going to stand up and lead, because nobody out there can seem to do the job. But not only has she not done that, she's told the people of California, hey, just slow your roll, be patient while the government figures this out. Thank God that we dodged this bullet of a Kamala Harris presidency, because this woman is a disaster. And I'll also say the Democrats seem to think she's going to be the front runner for 2028. Good. Name her at the top of the ticket again, because I would love to give her the shellacking of a lifetime. It's because she's just the worst, man. She's the worst.
Sean, James O'Keefe got some undercover video of a Pentagon guy. Well, here he was.
And I work at this top consulting firm, and my client is the Pentagon. So I'm embedded in the Pentagon. I work in the Joint Staff, which is the top military command.
What's your overall assessment of Trump?
He's a sociopathic narcissist. He's only interested in advancing his name, his wealth, and his fame.
Is there anything you can do to protect American people from stuff that he might try to do?
I'm in conversation with a couple of retired generals to try to explore what we can do.
Well, that's horrifying, Sean.
Yeah, it is, because not a single American citizen, Democrat or Republican, by the way, voted for any one of these disgusting federal bureaucrats. And by the way, if you are a federal bureaucrat, I don't care what you want to call them a member of the blob, the deep state, entrenched bureaucracy, whatever, you work at the behest of the president. So you can disagree all you want, but if you're going to actively work against him, and again, this goes Democrat or Republican. I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. We elect presidents in this country. If you're going to be a bureaucrat that's working against the president, one, if you're identified, you should be fired. If not, if you would disagree with the president and can't continue to do your job, then quit. Go away. Because ultimately, what these people do when we talk about the deep state or the entrenched bureaucracy or whatever, they work against the American people. And just watching that video that you showed here. Here they are inside the Beltway at a swanky DC restaurant that probably 90% of the American people couldn't afford to eat there. They sit there and talk about how they know better than the very people that put President Trump in office. That, my friend, is a real problem, and it needs to stop in 5 days when Trump goes back to the White House.
No doubt. Sean, host of Battleground Live, I'll talk to you again soon, my friend. All right. We had a couple chicks on the House floor, Jasmine Crockett, Nancy Mace, throw poop at each other. It was embarrassing, kind of hot. We'll talk about it with the panel next.
Some
somebody's campaign coffers really are struggling right now. So she gonna keep saying trans, 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 so that people will feel threatened. And child, listen, I want y'all to tell
no
me
child.
Whether or
Do
not.
Do not call me a child. I am no child.
I want
Don't
to
even
find
start.
Out.
I am a grown
which
woman.
Of those emails
I have
actually
broken
have
glass ceilings.
Chairman,
you
I'm reclaiming
Let's
my
go.
Time.
You will not do that.
Order.
I am not
Chairman.
A child.
I am reclaiming my time.
If you want to take it outside,
Mr. Chairman, the committee is
okay.
not
okay.
in order.
Order, order.
Point of order. Point of order.
Order, order, order.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I enjoyed it. Look, I enjoyed it. Like I said, maybe they can hug it out or whatever. Joining me now, my friend Inez Stettman, senior policy analyst for the Independent Women's Forum. And of course, Terry Schilling, president of American Principles Project. Okay, Terry, setting aside the hug it out part, it really doesn't bother me because I consider the House of Representatives to be an embarrassment. So when I look at another embarrassment that's on camera, it's just one more embarrassment on top of a whole mountain of embarrassment. Not sure why I should care.
Look, it's a total mess, right? This is a total disaster. Jasmine Crockett is an embarrassment to Texas. This is exactly why we don't need more progressive women in Congress. I would much rather it be 435 Inez Stettmans because they're calm, they're cool, they're rational, and they're smart, and they want to do the right thing for this country. They don't want to destroy it. Jasmine Crockett using this, trying to suggest that the only reason Nancy Mace is talking about this is to fill up her campaign coffers. Where were you 4 or 5 years ago, right? This is not a very popular fight to pick. It's only popular now because we won an election over it. And it's because of that Donald Trump's in the office. So Jasmine Crockett's an embarrassment. She did the thing with the Black Lives Matter, right? She's projecting. They were running low on campaign funds, so then they started the whole Black Lives Matter movement off of these criminals and people that were killed by cops that were robbing places and using counterfeit bills. So I'm not surprised. This is typical progressive behavior in Congress, and no one else should be surprised either.
I don't necessarily disagree about the embarrassingness. I don't even know if that's a word. I didn't go to college. Of Jasmine Crockett. She even got the hair toss in there. But Nancy Mace, Inez, in my opinion, is no less embarrassing, to be honest. Yeah, she'll fall down on the right side of an issue every now and then, but her reputation is that of a nasty hag. And to be honest, if you'll pardon my French, she seems like a bit of an attention hound. I realize there are kids watching.
Look, I'm going to rip a joke from my friend and former colleague Emily Jashinsky and say I think these two ladies were actually just trying to demonstrate to Pete Hegseth that women can be in combat. And they're demonstrating it on the floor of the Congress right now. No, this is embarrassing. This is not behavior. I don't think either one of them, frankly, is behaving in a way that's becoming of somebody who actually wields serious power in this country. And just to say something serious for half a second, I know this is the Jesse Kelly show, but you know, this kind of behavior is obviously, it's funny, like sort of on the surface, but there is a deeper problem here, which is that like these people aren't actually accountable. They wield real power. It's easy to sort of make fun of this, but they wield real power. They don't take any seriousness or accountability. And that's the problem just, you know, throughout a lot of the ranks of our government, is that they wield a lot of power and they don't want to be responsible for it. And they'd rather do these little clips and flip their hair and like go back and forth and these kinds of exchanges. And maybe we deserve it because we, the voters, rarely punish them for this kind of behavior.
Well, Inez, just staying with you, how could I look at it any other way? I mean, when people talk about how embarrassing their congressman is, their senator is, I always like to go back and look at the results of the last election, and voila, looks like the people of their district love this crap. Yeah, Jasmine Crockett's a piece of trash. The people in her district, they love pieces of trash. Nancy Mace is embarrassing. The people in her district, they love that crap.
Yeah, well, you know, that's democracy at some level, right? You vote for the clown that will pull the lever for the things that are important to you, hopefully. But yeah, there doesn't seem to be a lot of seriousness in terms of accountability. And unfortunately, perhaps this is the result of a, you know, sort of long period in which America, although we face many, many domestic, very serious challenges, right? We haven't been in an era of great power warfare, for example, for a while. You know, maybe one hopes that seriousness will return if that comes to pass. Hopefully it won't, but if it does, one hopes at least that there will be some serious people left in the government to deal with problems like that. But Look, after COVID, I'm not optimistic about that sobering us up.
Yeah, neither am I. Terry, there's a bill right now, Tommy Tuberville's all over it, about banning men and women's sports. And this comes back to something, I hate to be King Cynic all the time, but yeah, that's fine, pass a bill. But when you get to the point as a country where you have to pass bills to stop dudes from beating up chicks in sports, you're not in a healthy place. Even if the bill passes, you're in a bad, bad place.
No, that's exactly right, Jesse. I could not agree with you more. And why are we passing? And think about this. Look, I fully support these bills. I'm the, you know, the trans guy. That's the joke. Emily Jacinth, she says that I'm the trans guy. But think about this. We're passing a women's sports bill. That has a better chance. Protecting girls' sports has a better chance of passing than banning sex change procedures for minors. Right, banning sex change procedures for minors that chop off healthy young girls' breasts and alter young boys' bodies and sterilize them. These drugs that they give them, by the way, Jesse, they're too cruel for us to give to sex offenders, right? It's too cruel. It's illegal to give them to sex offenders, but we give them to children to affirm their gender. That has less of a shot of passing than women's sports. So I agree. We're in a very unhealthy spot as a country, but I think it's starting to turn around, and you start small, and then hopefully you get bigger.
Inez, what do you make of Pam Bondi? Everybody I talk to who's familiar with her says fairly, pretty much the same thing, very qualified, very competent, that she'll do a solid job. But I personally am not looking for a solid job. I'm looking for government criminals to be arrested. And I don't know that's what I'm getting. What do you make of her?
I think that's probably going to have more to do with Trump than Pam Bondi. I mean, I have the same assessment of, I guess, of all your friends, Jesse. She seems very serious, intelligent. And actually, I think somebody of that nature, that little bit of a quieter nature, is actually very, very necessary to actually clean out the rot in DOJ, because a lot of the stuff that went down is ultimately about judgment calls within an institution. And it's going to take somebody with some kind of institutional knowledge and a lot of patience to actually unwind who did what here. And so I think even for your purposes, if you want to see people brought to justice for misusing their power against the American people in a politicized way, then I think what you actually need is somebody a little bit like Pam Bondi. But can I comment on that bill? Because we were a big proponent of this bill. Obviously, I think this is a wonderful bill. It's necessary. It's sad that it is necessary. I want to point out how necessary it is. Most Democrats voted against this bill. You say it's so basic, right? And now the Democrats are gaslighting us into saying that no, that was never a really big problem, that men were in women's sports and nobody claimed that men could actually become women, and that was just such a side issue and it was unimportant and blah blah blah. I know Terry hears this all the time, right? That the culture war issues are unimportant. There are only two Democrats in the entire House who are brave enough to vote in favor of this extremely basic bill. Both of them, I believe, Hispanic Democrats from Texas. Okay, so the vast majority of Democrats voted against this very basic and simple bill to disallow bureaucrats from writing gender identity into the Civil Rights Act by unilateral authority and allowing, therefore, men to go into women's sports. Most basic thing you could ever imagine, and almost all the Democrats voted against it.
Can I add on to that, Jesse, real quick? Because I think it's a huge reflection on the Democratic Party, right? These are half of the country is represented by these sick, twisted, evil people that have no concern or care for our women or daughters or our children, right? It's not, you poll this issue and it's a 70-30 issue. The vast majority of Americans are very good on this, but they're elected representatives, they're Democrats, and these weak Republicans who have been holding this stuff up for so long, those are really the problem here.
No doubt. Terry, Inez, appreciate you both. Come back soon. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And for this lighten the mood, I thought maybe we should pay homage to freshman senator. Don't know him yet. Maybe he'll be a disaster. Maybe he'll be wonderful. But Navy SEAL Tim Sheehy got elected as senator, bounced out a loser Democrat in my home state of Montana. Well, my former home state. And I did very much enjoy his line of questioning with Pete Hegseth. I can't wait to have somebody as SecDef who actually knows about weapons.
How many genders are there? Tough one.
Senator, there are two genders.
I know that well. I'm a Sheehy, so I'm on board. What is the diameter of the rifle round fired out of an M4 A1 rifle?
That's a 5.56.
How many push-ups can you do?
I did 5 sets of 47 this morning.
What do you think our most important strategic base is in the Pacific?
In the Pacific, Guam is pretty strategically significant.
How many rounds of 5.56 can you fit into the magazine of an M4 rifle?
Depends on the magazine, but standard issue is 30.
And what size round does the M9 Beretta standard issue sidearm for the military fire?
A 9mm, Senator.
What kind of batteries do you put in your night vision goggle?
Duracell.
So right there, you're representing qualifications that show you understand what the warfighter deals with every single day on the battlefield. You understand what happens on the front line, where our troops will be.
Pretty good. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.